From NPR and WBUR, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. And just minutes ago, President Trump tweeted that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is resigning. We're pleased to announce that Matthew G. Whitaker, Chief of Staff to Attorney General Jeff Sessions at the Department of Justice, will become our new Acting Attorney General of the United States. He will serve our country well. We thank Attorney General Jeff Sessions for his service and wish him well. A permanent replacement will be nominated at a later date. Well, we're joined now by NPR's National Security Editor Phil Ewing. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
And lead politics editor Domenico Montanaro. Hi to you, Domenico.
Hi to you as well.
So, Phil, take the Sessions resignation, or as he reportedly said in his letter to the president, his resignation at the president's request, which some will call a firing, not entirely a surprise?
That's right. It's something we've been preparing for some time. And as you mentioned, the first line in the Attorney General, I should say former Attorney General's resignation letter is, at your request, I'm submitting my resignation. In other words, this is a public official who wanted to continue to do this job. He, by all accounts, liked being Attorney General. He liked running federal law enforcement. He liked running big prosecutions and, you know, getting the bad guys. But the president was never able to overcome what he viewed as the Attorney General's original sin, recusing himself from the Russia investigation. That meant, in the president's view, Sessions couldn't protect him from what he considers the hoax being run by the special counsel, Robert Mueller, looking into whether anyone on Trump's campaign conspired with the 2016 attack by Russians on the presidential election that year.
Domenico, just connect the election and this news today, because the election was not a referendum on Jeff Sessions. At the same time, does President Trump just look at the new situation that he has in the Senate and say, it's going to be easier for me now to get a Sessions replacement through the Senate and get that confirmation through because I have more votes in the Senate?
Well, I think he would have done this either way. I think that everybody was sort of preparing for the fact that it would be, if not the day after the election, at least in the days after the election. He didn't want to do anything. He was being urged not to do anything before the election so as to not throw anything off. Now the results are in, and he did what he did. I was, frankly, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but sort of surprised that the president went on for an hour and a half or so with the news media. He was asked directly about his cabinet and shakeups and transitions and changes more than once. And he said, oh, you'll find out about that in a week or so. And shortly after that that press conference was over, we have this announcement.
Yeah, that was about an hour and 27 minute press conference. But are there any dots to connect to the investigation into Russian election interference, the Mueller investigation? I mean, now that there are, you know, now the Democrats have control of the House and will have, you know, leadership on committees, are they a firewall against the president firing Rod Rosenstein?
One thing the president has said today is that if Democrats use their new majority in the House to begin more investigations of him and his administration, if they start to issue subpoenas that the Republican majority today would not permit to be issued, that he is going to fight fire with fire. And he may believe that having someone who's more simpatico at the head of the Justice Department, as well as a strengthened majority in the Senate, will enable him to do the same things that Republicans are attempting to do to him. That isn't the way it has worked traditionally in Washington. You know, an administration didn't try and get back at Congress for doing oversight, which is its constitutionally mandated responsibility. But Trump views things in a very different way. He has a very kind of adversarial and sometimes transactional relationship with leaders in Congress and people he views as his enemies, people as he views as his supporters. And if he believes that some new attorney general could take the fight to new Speaker Nancy Pelosi in the new Congress, that may be one reason for the president's calculus.
The leader in the Senate of the Democrats, Chuck Schumer, has said today in response to this news that any new attorney general nominee must not interfere with the Mueller probe. Domenico, is Schumer or any of the Democrats going to be able to do anything about that?
Not particularly. You know, they can set out a moral standard for it or what they think. But, you know, the fact of the matter is this president can – he may take a more nuanced approach rather than a Saturday Night Massacre-like approach. And instead of firing, you know, Rod Rosenstein and everybody else who oversees the investigation, perhaps put somebody in charge at the Justice Department who can put some stricter reins on the investigation to prevent them from going in various directions or to at least, you know, be somebody who could – at least report back to the president on what's actually going on in it so that he feels more prepared.
Yeah, we just have a couple minutes left here. We did have that extraordinary press conference. It got very fiery and heated at times between the president and the press. We also had Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the Democrats in the House, also having a press conference. Just from each of you, what did you hear? Was there something that you heard that was unexpected or, illuminating? I mean, this is the day after and each is trying to make the best of what happened. But did you hear something new or different?
One point the president made, given this discussion and the dismissal of the attorney general, was that he said he believes he has the power to fire everyone involved. As Domenico was just discussing, he could, he views, get rid of the leadership of the Justice Department and the special counsel and the special counsel's office if he wanted to. Now, that's not a consensus position. I'm not sure if everyone in Washington would agree. But he says he hasn't done it because he thinks it's important for this matter to play out. And he also acknowledged how bad it might look for him politically to do that. So even as he's changing the leadership of the Justice Department, the president did acknowledge today that he feels constrained or that he feels like there's some structure on what he practically can and can't do here.
You know, you saw two very different tones between Nancy Pelosi and President Trump. President Trump's default position is to be combative and to have a chip on his shoulder. And he's able to do that with the press to say that they're the enemy of the people or at least an enemy of his. And with Nancy Pelosi and Democrats, they were really fueled to power by independents and voters in the suburbs who might actually be somewhat more center-right. You'll have a lot of centrists who are coming into Congress, and they see an opportunity with President Trump continuing to try to fire up the Republican base that Democrats can own the middle. And I think that's where we're going to see some of this tug and pull on who can control the middle. And if President Trump continues to cede that ground, Democrats are going to try to go right through there.
Domenico, we're going to go to Pennsylvania in a second, but what's the moral of the story for Jeff Sessions?
Well, look, Jeff Sessions was somebody who was the very first person in the Senate to endorse President Trump. He was the earliest person to get on board when nobody else would, and President Trump is willing to throw him under the bus, so no one is safe.
Okay. Domenico Montanaro, NPR lead politics editor and national security editor Phil Ewing, thanks to both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And we are still, of course, digesting all the results from yesterday, and we want to check in on Pennsylvania, where Democrats picked up several House seats and will send an evenly split delegation of Republicans and Democrats to Congress next year. Democrats also defended a Senate seat and the governorship in Pennsylvania, a state that President Trump won in 2016. Terry Madonna is director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Professor, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And let's start with that fact that President Trump won that state in 2016. Mm-hmm. That was one of his tickets to the White House, basically. And now we're seeing a lot of Democrats once again doing very well in Pennsylvania. What do you make of what happened?
Yeah, well, the Democrats were much more enthusiastic about the election, much more cohesive and more likely to cast straight party votes. That was in the FNM poll we released about 9 days ago. The bottom line here is quite simple. Democrats turned out largely because of a rejection of President Trump. They opposed the president, his policies. And as you know from your coverage, midterm elections are essentially a referendum on the president. We also know that presidents hate midterms because typically their party loses seats in the House and the Senate. But this election, more than any since scientific polling began, certainly indicated the degree to which this was a referendum on the president. And Democrats enthusiastically turned out against the president, just as Republicans enthusiastically turned out for the president. But in Pennsylvania, there are more Democrats than Republicans. And by and large, Democrats were simply more motivated and turned out in larger numbers.
What was it? Was the president's tone? Because we saw some foreshadowing of that in Pittsburgh after that horrendous temple shooting where people didn't want him to come. Was it health care? You know, what was it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a combination of a whole variety of things. In the main, I think it comes down to his style and his personality, which lots of other observers have commented about the combative nature, the controversial style that he brings to the presidency, unlike any other president in American history. Now, some presidents have been very unpopular, but not essentially because of the style and because of their personality and how they present issues and attack foes and use rhetoric. And, you know, there's some opposition, and health care did emerge as an important issue, as it did in many other places, not so much the Affordable Care Act as an entity, but coverage for pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. That was used by Democrats in a number of congressional elections, and it came up repeatedly in the polls.
Well, let's talk about one more thing in the last 30 seconds or so we have here. The people that were elected last night, four were right. women, all Democrats, Susan yep. Wild, Madeline Dean, Chrissy Houlihan, and Mary Gay Scanlon. What's the significance of that, do you think, in Pennsylvania, which has all men serving right now?
Yeah, all men. Not only that, we've never elected in this state a female governor or a female United States senator. I'll sit back and gasp. Well, we can all take a gasp at that. But right now, we have no woman in our 18-person congressional delegation. The most we have ever had in the history of the state at any one time is two. So now we go to four. And these were basically three of the four were elected in the Philadelphia suburbs. To a great extent because of a new congressional map issued by the Pennsylvania right. Supreme Court.
The lines,
But make no mistake about it, that's an important aspect of the 2018 yep. midterm.
Terry Madonna, Director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. Thank you. Now let's go to Florida, where the Republican Ron DeSantis edged out the Democrat Andrew Gillum for governor and former Governor Rick Scott. The Republican holds a small lead over the incumbent, the Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. There is going to be a recount. Let's bring in Ryan Daly, who covers politics for WFSU in Tallahassee. And Ryan, the last time we spoke, when we were visiting you, the Democrats, Gillum and Nelson, well, at least Gillum, were polling ahead. Nelson, you know, very close. What happened?
Yeah, well, and thanks for having me, Robin. Early in the night, things looked really good for the Gillum campaign. He was holding on to a 2-point lead driven by some South Florida counties, Orange County in the middle of the state, some of the most populous in Florida. But it wasn't until about 8 p.m. when those western panhandle counties began reporting that DeSantis started to surge. And I think that panhandle vote is one of the bigger stories out of DeSantis's win. That you got to remember that region got walloped by a hurricane a month ago. That's what you were here looking into. And, you know, Donald Trump goes out and holds a rally, and those Republican candidates maintained visibility there in those final weeks. And those voters came through for them from those Republican strongholds.
And Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, he got embroiled in a kerfuffle about whether or not he'd received tickets to Hamilton. But still, people seem to be, you know, front and center with him. Look, a lot of people are saying, wow, this is a big loss for the Democrats. But on the other hand, that it was that close, what does that mean for the Democratic Party in Florida?
Right. I think that's a good point. I think Gillum's candidacy did make history when it comes to Florida's Democratic Party. I mean, I wouldn't have any reservations calling him the most progressive candidate to be nominated by the party in this state.
Pretty amazing he did as well as he did given that in a red state.
Right. I mean, what played out on election night was about as tight a race as you could ever see. And I think it's a sign of, if nothing else, the viability of progressive ideas at the statewide level here in Florida. I mean, Gillum won Duval County, home to Jacksonville, which historically goes Republican. And I know that was a very big deal.
Ryan, I just want to ask you about these two races, the Senate race and the governor's race. We were watching the results come in last night, and all the way along, Bill Nelson was doing a little bit better than Andrew Gillum, which was sort of a surprise because the conventional wisdom leading up to Election Day was that Nelson was going to be riding on Gillum's coattails in Florida.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of discussion on is he going to ride that Gillum wave? I think that's something that's going to play out in the analysis and, you know, in these days after the election. I think one thing that Democrats are probably asking themselves today are, you know, where were those NPA voters? Those non-party affiliated voters. Mm-hmm. You know, that there was a kind of school of thought out there that they would be the ones putting Nelson and Gillum over the top, and clearly that didn't happen. So I think that's something that political analysts and pollsters are going to be really keeping in, you know, keeping their eye on forward here.
Well, let's ask the question. I mean, Andrew Gillum also was very pro-science of climate change, and here's a state that's been battered by it, and you had DeSantis who was, you know, not making waves about that. DeSantis is also going to be able to replace three very left-leaning judges on the state Supreme Court as the new governor. That was going to be the next governor's job. Is it possible that, you know, are people asking about whether or not Florida was ready? Many Floridians were ready for their first black governor.
Oh, I think that's definitely in the discussion right now. I mean, you saw a huge swath of the population that Andrew Gillum's ideas really did resonate with, and you know, his environmental ideas particularly. And I know in his concession speech, he said, in spite of me calling the other candidate tonight to congratulate him, I still believe in those ideas that we need to clean up the environment. And those issues aren't going away here in Florida. We are going to see how Governor-elect DeSantis handles that.
And Ryan Daly, we don't even have to wait to find out about the analysis of this because we've got the two analysts right here. Ryan, thank you so much. And let's go to Jamal Simmons, host at Hill TV, Democrat, and also Republican strategist John Brabender. Jamal, what do you think happened in Florida? Why didn't Gillum win? And why did Nelson do better than Gillum?
Well, I'm standing here in the Tallahassee airport after being outside in the rain last night in Florida. Listen, I think that the people are sussing through right now all the results to see what really happened and who did well and who didn't, who performed well and who didn't. You can't take race out of this equation. What we saw in a really interesting, you talked about this a second ago, the numbers of people who were with Senator Nelson and holding on to Senator Nelson while Andrew Gillum was just doing a little bit worse. We also saw people, I think there were three Democratic races, three congressional races down ballot people were paying attention to. Two of those races turned out well for the Democrats, including Donna Shalala. Maybe it usually doesn't go that way. It usually goes top of the ticket, does pretty well, and then people down ballot do a little worse, but that's not the way it worked out.
Yeah. We want to also ask John Brabender to weigh in. And John, perhaps you want to comment on Florida, but I really want to ask you about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, essentially fired. Is this the right move for the president today? Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think it's a better move after the election than the day before the election. But with that said, he's the one who picked Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions was an early supporter, but I don't think it was a surprise to anybody that the president was – they knew he was disappointed with Jeff Sessions. We knew that there was a lot of pressure on Jeff Sessions to leave. It's my understanding that it was Kelly that went and told Jeff Sessions earlier today. And so, after an election, after a midterm, it's not unusual for the White House to start cleaning house a bit. I think this was their top priority. I think the mistake's going to be if people start making these broad assumptions that this is some way to start to end the Mueller probe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we know that. I think that's a broad jump to go to that conclusion at this point.
And would that be a mistake in your mind?
In my mind, it would be. I think that people want to let that play out. I think Mueller has enough credibility. However, I do think people, particularly with the election of Nancy Pelosi now in charge, are worried that this is going to become the most litigious legislative body ever in trying to become more the justice and prosecutorial department rather than the House of Representatives. And so it is going to be interesting to see where this plays out. And Donald Trump, I think earlier today, was very clear in saying, if they want to work together and get things done, I'm all for it. I'll be there. But if they are just going to start probe after probe, we're going to do the same thing with their behavior.
Well, and we remember that when Republicans controlled the House, I don't know how many investigations there were of the Benghazi situation. But Jamal, what do you think that this Sessions resignation means and are you worried?
Listen, I think Donald Trump is going to be sorry about the overhead here.
It's okay. The flight to Pittsburgh is leaving now.
Yes, exactly. Donald Trump is going to be Donald Trump, and he's going to continue to do the things that made him popular. I just don't want to leave the elections just yet because I think Democrats had a really good day yesterday, and I think we can't – we lost a couple of big marquee races. But there were seven gubernatorial pickups. That's going to matter a lot when it comes to redistricting. And in my home state of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer won the governor's race, but you also had women win the attorney general's race and the secretary of state's race, and you had the first black lieutenant governor. And again, in Wisconsin, you had another black lieutenant governor. And you had the first Muslim Americans who won in Minnesota for Congress, Minnesota and Michigan. I think that what happened, again, is not just a blue wave. It kind of was a red, white, and blue surge among the Democrats to take America to a place where we have more diverse officials. And listen, even though Andrew Gillum lost and Stacey Abrams is having a tough time, we have some new Democratic stars out there. I mean, Beto O'Rourke is not going anywhere. He's a young man. So is Andrew. But the Democrats run for president in 2020, or when they do, we've got some great surrogates and maybe a couple of cabinet members, and we'll see what they do in the future.
Well, John Brabender, sum up your side. Go ahead.
Well, but yeah, look, I feel like we're giving out a lot of participation trophies here. I mean, there certainly wasn't a wave. I'm not even sure there was a wink.
No,
but wait,
John,
no, wait a minute. I let you say what you thought. I mean, look, if there's another Supreme Court justice nominated, I assure you, you're not going to look back at these elections when that's happening in the Senate and saying this was a great day for the Democrat Party. The truth of the matter is there were less than half of a change in the House of Representatives than there was 2 years in the President Obama. Yeah. Historically, what we saw yesterday was very traditional, and you would have expected to do much, much better in the Senate than we saw, with the Republicans picking up probably minimally 3 seats.
But John Brabender, are you worried about how well progressives did in Texas, you know, in Florida, in Georgia, seeding, bringing so many more Democrats into the fold, into the booths for 2020?
Well, but still, it's not like there is this big wave where that happened. In fact, let's not forget to add that there are certain Democrats that actually only got elected because they weren't progressives. I think Conor Lamb is the perfect example. He's very close to being a Republican, got elected in a swing district because they don't like to support progressives. And so to believe that there is this big movement within the country of a progressive, I think, is wrong. Are there pockets within the Democratic Party?
No.
Absolutely. But to call yesterday in any way a big victory for the Democrats, I think, is beyond support.
Jamal, take 30 seconds.
Winning 7 governorships matters. Putting 100, we're going to have the largest class of women in the House ever. It's going to be 100 women in the House, House of Representatives, the first Muslim, the first 6 Democratic veterans won their contested elections, Native Americans. I mean, this is a very big statement by the American people that we want to have an America where everybody gets to participate. Well, meanwhile, the Republicans, just for the record, the Republicans who have people like Nikki Haley and
we're going to have to,
and a bunch of others. Hold on.
We're going to wrap it up.
They had no candidates of color running for governor yesterday.
Your plane is leaving.
Women to the Senate,
Jamal,
you know.
Your plane is leaving. Look, John Brabender, you're right. The Republicans held on to the Senate, and we're going to leave it at that. Jamal Simmons, John Brabender, thank you.
Thank you.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes. Set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
There's breaking news this afternoon that we're following, that Attorney General Jeff Sessions has resigned the day after the midterms. President Trump says that Sessions' chief of staff, Matthew Whitaker, will serve as acting attorney general and that a permanent replacement will be named at a later date. We continue to follow that story, but let's turn right now to Illinois, where Democrats picked up the governor's office and added seats in Congress. Billionaire J.B. Pritzker, heir to the Hyatt hotel chain, easily defeated Republican incumbent Bruce Rauner, another billionaire in the governor's race. Here's Pritzker in his victory speech.
Voting is an act of optimism that the levers of our democracy still work. You embody that optimism. You light the beacon fire on the hill of history that signals from one generation to another that these are the things that we stand and fight for.
Let's bring in Bernie Schoenberg, who's a political columnist for the State Journal Register in Springfield, Illinois. He's at WUIS. Bernie, Pritzker was leading in the polls and won by nearly 15 points. What do you think happened there in Illinois? Why the change?
I think it's been a really tough 4 years under Governor Rauner. Illinois has been a split state in the past, but it's trending more blue recently. So after 26 years of Republican governors, we had 12 of Democrats. Governor Rauner came in as a Republican who really wanted to do things like Scott Walker in Wisconsin. He wanted right-to-work zones in the state. He wanted to lessen the impact of public sector unions, for example. But he had an overwhelmingly Democratic legislature, and he thought he could force change. And in order to force change, there came out a budget impasse, and so we didn't have a state budget for 2 full years. Rauner is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Maybe he used to be a private equity investor or an equity investor person. So he was very rich, and he spent a lot of money, and he put $50 million in his own campaign fund for his reelection.
Wow.
Probably never thinking that J.B. Pritzker of the Hyatt Foundation or the Hyatt family would come in and ended up spending more than $170 million. I said $170 – the governor had put in $50 million. Pritzker put in $170 million of his own, but also really organized Democrats throughout the state, set up, I think it was 50 offices across the state, had about 200 staff, really helped build up the Democratic Party to some structural ways that hadn't been there in a while. So it was a combination of Pritzker was saying, you know, 4 years of failure is enough, that kind of thing. The Governor Rauner was trying to tie Pritzker to the Chicago Democratic machine and used a lot of that regionalism that we see in our state. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think that kind of message that you just heard Pritzker say, the positivity, was something he was trying to get across.
Wait, and Bernie, just in a minute we have, I mean, why does this matter? Why do governors matter? Some people might think, well, wait, it's just my state. What does it matter? But they can work with presidents towards presidential elections. I mean, why else does this matter?
Well, it matters. In a sense, we've got, you know, like 60,000 state employees, or maybe it's 50, but there are thousands and thousands of employees all over the state. They oversee so many programs and put so many people in charge of things, in addition to, you know, as in with taking care of youths and the elderly, getting federal funds and working with people. Our current governor, according to Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin, the two United States senators, both Democrats, said basically they never got a call in the last 4 years, or Duckworth for two, from Governor Rauner. Huh. They will work with Pritzker and work better on those things. Plus, he'll run the state agencies.
Right. Well, we will see what happens in Illinois with now a Democratic governor coming in. Bernie Schoenberg, thank you.
You bet.
We're continuing to get great perspective on yesterday's election. Up next, Enrique Acevedo, Univision News anchor, special correspondent for Fusion Media. Enrique, we heard the president today in his press conference say that, you know, when he was asked, should you have talked about the caravans? Was your tone divisive? He said no. He made the election about immigration and the caravan that's 800 miles away. He could point to that and say, and it worked. You say what?
Well, I think it didn't work for many House Republicans who lost their seat last night, and it certainly didn't help the Republican Party's cause in trying to keep a majority in Congress. Democrats, I think, welcomed that rhetoric from the president, and we'll see what happens now with the 5,000 troops that were deployed to the border for what seems were electoral purposes, and we'll see if the White House keeps talking about the evil caravan in the next few weeks while they try to make their way to the border.
Do you think, Enrique, that there's any chance that there's going to be action on immigration? Mitch McConnell, the Senate majority leader, was asked about it this morning. He says, we always try to do it and it never works, no matter whether it's Democrats or Republicans in charge. Now, do you think that there's any push to actually do something about immigration?
I'm starting to lose hope, Jeremy. We've talked about this so many times before in the past, and it's really what we should be focusing on a real comprehensive solution that comes from Congress, a bipartisan commitment to a solution like this. Because no matter where you stand on the issue of immigration, you have to recognize that our system is broken. It's not working both from the legal perspective and in trying to stop or to mitigate the root causes of undocumented immigration. So we really need to put forward a comprehensive plan that both parties can agree on. We really need to get away from the extremes that have hijacked the debate on immigration and really try to put forward common sense laws that help us modernize and make this immigration system much more efficient.
Yeah, in case anybody wonders about my characterization of the president, we have him speaking. This was after he wouldn't speak to Jim Acosta from CNN when he asked about why did you bring up a caravan that's so far away. NBC's Peter Alexander took up the same kind of topic. Let's listen.
Why are you pitting Americans against one another, sir?
I'm not.
Is that how you view
citizens
of this country?
I'll tell you what. We won a lot of elections last night. We did very well last night.
And but in many ways,
I think it's going to have a very positive impact.
Enrique, the president was also asked if he had any regrets about running that ad that even Fox News pulled because it was considered racist, showing an immigrant, an illegal immigrant who had killed two police officers, positioning this man as representing all immigrants. And the president said that the question was racist and the person who'd asked it was African-American. Where's this dialogue going?
I'm not sure, Robin. And, you know, I've asked the president before, during a luncheon before the State of the Union last year, what he thought the role of the media was in his administration. And he said, well, I just want you guys to be fair. And that's at the bottom of this issue. What's fair for the president is a press and reporters that are not asking uncomfortable questions, are not asking the questions that reporters should be asking, trying to represent a watchdog and play that role as a watchdog of political power for these administrations, for administrations in the past, and for administrations to come in the future. So I think the president thinks it's not fair for the press to ask these uncomfortable questions, and that's something that we should all be worried about because that's the job of the press. That's the job of journalism, of journalists covering the president.
Hey, Enrique, we could have spent this entire conversation talking to you about immigration or talking to you about Florida, where you are, or we could have talked just about the results of the House or the Senate. But now we have this news today about Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, resigning, being fired by the president of the United States. This has been talked about for a long time. It's been called a break the glass moment by a senior Democrat in the Senate. What do you make of this and what do you think it means?
You know, I think it's related in a way to the question about what the president thinks is fair coverage. I think the president thought that his attorney general should act in a fair way according to his interests and not the interests of the American people. He doesn't represent the Department of Justice. He represents Donald Trump. That's what the president thinks. And that's why, ultimately, Jeff Sessions was fired, because he recused himself from this Russia meddling investigation and because he made decisions that I think most people would agree were trying to protect the interests of the Department of Justice, the integrity and the credibility of the institution, and not to act as a lawyer to the president. It also, I think, reactivates this debate about how can the attorney general be both loyal to the president that appoints him and independent from the executive power.
Well, and the irony, of course, is that Jeff Sessions has done more than many in the Trump administration to carry out President Trump's agenda, including really packing courts with conservative jurists.
And I think that's a long-lasting legacy for President Trump. He's now, in a position, thanks to what happened yesterday with the Senate, to keep appointing more judges to courts and to really have an impact in the judiciary branch for many years to come. We're worried now about gerrymandering, about how local legislatures play a role in defining our politics way beyond their terms. And we should also be worried about how these changes in the judiciary will shape the discussion moving forward and the balance of powers, of power moving forward for many years to come.
Enrique Acevedo, Univision News anchor, special correspondent for Fusion Media in Florida there. Enrique, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, much of the world was paying attention to yesterday's vote in Moscow. A spokesman for the Kremlin called the results predictable and said it's not clear what effect they will have on the relationship between the U.S. and Russia. Germany's foreign minister said the outcome means American foreign policy will now depend on whether Democrats and Republicans can work together. And Italy's right-wing deputy premier Matteo Salvini tweeted his congratulations to President Trump, saying the results went against all predictions of a blue wave. Joining us now for reaction in the UK is BBC political correspondent Rob Watson in London. Hi, Rob.
Hi there. Hi to you both and to everybody listening. Mm-hmm.
So what's the reaction there to what we're watching here in the United States in the midterm elections?
I guess the reaction is, what on earth does it all mean? And of course, I think the first thing to note is that there has been wall-to-wall coverage here in the UK, which is actually rather rare because we tend to spend most of our time looking at ourselves and at Brexit, but the BBC and plenty of others have been deploying their teams across the United States. And so we in the UK have, this often happens at elections, that journalists, broadcasters use it as an opportunity to take the temperature of the United States. And of course, we've seen the extraordinary levels of support for Donald Trump and the people that don't like him very much at all. And I guess the way I would sort of sum up the reaction is people are seeing that the United States is deeply divided, and it's now got a deeply divided government.
Well, I was going to ask, because you have a country that is more than deeply divided. It's breaking away, you know, from the EU, and there's a huge tensions over that. Do in Britain, are people looking back here and thinking that it's riven that much here?
It's really interesting you should raise that. I mean, I certainly, as a journalist, see that there are clearly parallels where you have an issue, or in the case of the United States, a president who polarizes the country so deeply. And I think in the past, the UK used to be rather different, but in a funny way, Brexit has got people talking about the sort of similarities between the United States and the UK. In other words, where you have what you might describe as a sort of values-based politics, really, really dividing people in a way they had no idea that they were that divided before. And of course, really interestingly, in the coverage of the US midterms and of politics here, people are sort of asking the same questions. Who on earth, whether in the US or in the UK, is going to stick all this back together again?
People in the UK know the names of the people that we've gotten to know here in this country that have been stars of this campaign? Beto O'Rourke, Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee, obviously Nancy Pelosi is going to be the Speaker of the House.
So I'm going to stick my neck out here and say most people in the UK can barely identify Theresa May or Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the opposition Labour Party. I mean, actually, one of the things that makes Britain, by and large, such an agreeable country is that people aren't very interested in politics or politicians. So I think the short answer to your question is no. And they would just tend to see this as a referendum on Donald Trump.
BBC political correspondent Rob Watson in London. Thank you.
Good to be with you both.
Okay, so that's the view from overseas. We are, of course, following all the news today, the day after the election. The Democrats have taken the House of Representatives. Republicans will hold on to the Senate. And the news late today that Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, is resigning.
Let's go to one of the most talked about contests in the midterms in Texas. Republican Senator Ted Cruz just held on to his seat in the challenge from the progressive Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke. In his victory speech, Cruz said he realized millions of people were inspired by O'Rourke.
Let me say to all of those who worked on his campaign, all of those who were inspired, that I am your senator as well. My responsibility is to represent every Texan.
Okay, and Beto O'Rourke vowed to work with Cruz and also thanked his supporters during an emotional concession speech last night.
It is the greatness to which we aspire and the work that we're willing to put into it to achieve it by which we will be known going forward. And this campaign holds a very special place in the history of this country every day going forward. And you have made that possible.
Let's bring in political scientist Sean Theriault at the University of Texas in Austin. Sean, we spoke to you during our election road trip. I was sitting with you at a park in Austin. Now we've got you at a distance. But what's your sense of what happened in Texas? It was pretty close, but Beto did not win.
That's right. It was closer than even the polls were suggesting it would be. But what we're seeing is it's a good day for Democrats in Texas. It's not a great day, of course, because that would be a Beto win. But it's a good day.
Yeah, well, but what kind of a day is it for Ted Cruz? Because, you know, he holds a unique position. He was somebody that during the campaign, a then candidate Donald Trump vilified, and he was seen as sort of becoming a lapdog for Trump in order to win this election. I mean, he won, and that's all he probably wants to know. But what's his standing now?
Yeah, that's right. So he won, and that's what matters most to him. I mean, if he had lost yesterday, his political career, I think, in essence, would be over. But because he won, he lives to fight another day. And with Trump being president, and presumably he runs for re-election in 2020, we're a ways away from thinking about the next steps for Ted Cruz. And as if we've learned anything in the era of Trump, that a month is a lifetime. So there'll be we'll hear from Ted Cruz again, I suspect.
Now, even though O'Rourke came up short, he is credited with helping carry Democrats in other races in Texas. Texas. Republican Pete Sessions, the House Rules Chairman, lost his seat in the 32nd Congressional District to Democrat Colin Allred. How big a deal is that?
Yeah, that's it's a big deal, right? Not only did Pete Sessions go down, but then John Culberson in Houston went down. I mean, both of these districts are these districts that we've been talking about being Hillary Clinton districts, where you have an educated population who are particularly turned off to the Trump message, especially over the last couple of weeks of the campaign.
Now, there are other races in Texas. One was the 21st Congressional District. The Republican Chip Roy, who worked for Ted Cruz, defeated the Democrat Joseph Kopser. So just what color is Texas now? I mean, it's red, but is it more of a
purplish
red? I mean, what's happening?
Yeah, I think purplish red is exactly the right thing. I mean, it's important to note that there were 10 races that were decided yesterday for the House of Representatives where the margin was less than 10 points. Right. So if Beto could have driven that turnout machine up just even a little bit more, we would be talking about the Democrats picking up 3, 4, 5, 6 seats, maybe even in Texas. And that kind of result would firmly put Texas in the purple category. But as it is, right, the election results last night indicate that it's slightly more purplish shade of red than it was before. But no doubt it's still red.
But Republicans won every statewide office in Texas.
But by much smaller margins that they won 4 years ago, mm-hmm. right? So a couple of the races, even for the statewide, were within 5 points. I mean, granted, almost only counts in a couple of different instances, but they're a heck of a lot closer than they were 4 years ago or even 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. To quote another Texan, Dan Rather, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, which was, he was quoting somebody else. But anyway, Sean, what about Beto 2020? People are waiting for him to start making an announcement about running for president.
Right. So I suspect that Beto has a future and he can determine what that future is going to be. I suspect for the next 6 months or so, he's going to stay in El Paso. He's going to help raise his kids again. He's going to reconnect with his family. And then I think that he's going to have to look himself in the mirror and figure out what the next best step is. I mean, it could be 2020 or it could be sitting out for a while. I mean, he's a young guy, so he could sit out 2020 and maybe 2024 or maybe run for governor in 4 years. But definitely with the result last night and the way that he galvanized the Texas population and really the Democrats around the country, he certainly has a future in politics if he wants a future.
Hey, Sean, just we only have about a minute here. What's the feeling like there in Texas outside of exhaustion? I mean, everybody's eyes were on Texas.
That's right. Right. So exhaustion is a good thing. And the Democrats in Texas, I would say that they're feeling OK. Right. They could have felt great with 2 or 3 more points, but they feel OK. Republicans, I think, are sweating a bit after the results from last night. And they recognize that at some point demographics is going to catch up and Texas is going to become competitive. But that was at least put off a little bit by the results that happened last night.
I just feel bad for all those people on TV who had to use the maps, the interactive maps. And they're so used to knowing all the Florida counties. But last night they had to know all the Texas counties, too.
That's a big state.
Right. Wasn't it great listening to John King actually talk about Texas counties? That hasn't happened as long as
not
I've been
in
Texas. And that's 20 years.
All right. Sean Theriault, political scientist at the University of Texas, Austin. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So much today, Robin.
What a day.
So much. Who knew?
And now we have tomorrow, as it turns out.
That's right. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now.